Welcome to Reality Student Ministries, and thanks for listening. We are all about learning how to live this life to the fullest, getting the most out of every day. For information on upcoming events, sermon series, and ways to connect, be sure to check us out online at reality.painesvilleag.com, as well as like our Facebook page at RSM. Now here's today's message.
I love New Year's. I love the whole idea of New Year's. It's this whole beginning, this whole woohoo, yeah! I just love New Year's and the whole idea of it. There's a few times that I'm really excited in the year. I'm excited probably every day of the year. I get really excited about every day. I wake up, I turn over to Lauren, I go, "Hey, guess what? It's morning!" And she's like, "Poof." So it's just one of those love-hate relationships in the morning, anytime before about 10 o'clock. But I love New Year's because it's this whole thing about being fresh and about starting something new. And man, it's an awesome reminder that our God is for us and not against us. Watching that video of thinking of, man, my past 2014, yeah, I screwed up. I'm sure you did too. Yeah, there's a lot of junk. There's a lot of stuff that I'm sure you went through just like I went through. A lot of times where I succeeded, a lot of times that I failed. But, man, I know that my God is for me, so who can be against me? That my past is not held against me. My God loves me passionately. And this is what's cool. Think about this. The year of 2015, check this. Check it. Ready? Check. Year of 2015 was created just for you. And you. It was created just for us. That God has a specific reason that we are here in this year of 2015. That every day God said, "Hey, no. Don't look ahead to 2016, 17, 18, 2050, right? But right now, I created you for this moment." God created you for that breath. It's crazy. You're like, "Wow, you're really getting into this." But I just like to think about the fact that when New Year's comes, God says, no, I got this amazing plan and this amazing thing for you. And so I like to do themes. A lot of times I get all sorts of geeked up about, vision and focus and what God's doing. And so the theme this year, as I was praying through, "God, what do you want to do?" And I saw a pattern. I love when you look back at your life and you ever do that? You look back at your life and you don't realize God's doing something then, but then you start to look back and you're like, "Oh, that's kind of cool." So I saw this pattern that God was taking all of us on in the sense that we did that series called The New Normal, and this whole idea that God's ways are higher than our ways, right? This whole idea that there's a difference when we say that we love Christ with everything, that there should be a difference in the way that we live. And so we see that, and this whole new normal set us up as a foundation to launch into this year. And the fact is that we serve the God of the impossible. And so in 2015, that's what we're going to start to realize, and we're going to start to really analyze, how do we serve the God of the impossible? Realizing that, when we go all in and all out for Jesus, nothing holds us back. That when we go all in and all out for Christ, that something powerful and amazing starts to happen in our lives. Because we're no longer holding back. And so some of us, we're going to start to have that realization. I pray that our eyes are kind of open. The verse that I kept going back to is in Matthew 19, verse 26. And you can write that as your scripture reference. It says, "For mortals," humans, that's us, "for mortals, it is impossible. But for God, all things are possible." What's cool about this verse is Jesus just got done talking to this rich guy. He's like, "Listen, it's going to be easier for a camel to pass through the eye of a needle than for the rich to get into heaven." And the disciples are like, "What? Like, I don't understand. How does that happen?" They're like, "Man, it's like if we look at it, it's like that person's successful, makes all the right decisions. How are they not going to get into heaven? How are we supposed to get into heaven if it's even impossible for them?" And Jesus turns around and says, "Yeah, it's impossible for you on your own merit, trying to do all the good works by yourself to get into heaven. But what's impossible for you is possible for God." And so his grace and his love and his mercy pours out on us. What's scary about this theme for me is when we start to, man, I was telling my mom about this over break. I started to tell her, I took her out for breakfast. My mom really likes quality time. Anyone in here, like their mom, maybe their dad, really likes like quality time, like just like one-on-one, like just, it's just like, so how are you today? What were you thinking about? When you woke up, what was your first thought? When you eat that, what are you thinking about when you're chewing on that? Isn't that incredible? Like, anyone else have, like, parents or siblings, like, that just, they love to just have quality time. Just, they want that. So, I know that about my mom, and so I was like, all right, Mom, let's go out to eat. So we went out for breakfast, and because my mom, just like me, is a morning person, right? And so she, like, gets up at, like, 4:45, 5 o'clock every morning, and is like, hello, son. She wakes the son up. It's, like, her job to wake the son up. She, like, calls. It's the son's alarm clock. Oh, go back to sleep, Debbie Stewart. No, it's time to get up, son. Like, that's my mom. So, so I took her out to eat. I started telling her. I even was getting teared up about this whole idea that I told. I was like, Mom, I don't want this to be the theme for my life. Not just for you guys, but for my life. I don't want this to be the theme. Because when I say that I want to serve the God of the impossible, that means that I'm going to have to face the impossible. And I'll be honest with you, I get scared when I think about that. Because what does that mean? Does that mean that something's going to happen to the health of my children? That I'm going to have to face an impossibility in my children's life or in my wife's life? Or, you know, is that going to mean I'm going to face an impossibility with family or finances or my own health or something like that? Emotional stability, job stability. What does that mean, God? I don't want to face the impossible. And that scares me. But it went back to that line that we said over and over and over again last semester, and it's going to carry on, is I'm not going to let fear dictate the call of God on my life. And so what might be impossible for me isn't an issue with God. And so that's what we're going to start talking about, and I'm excited about what God's going to do and where he's going to take not just you, but take me in this whole realm of things. I started thinking about impossibilities and what that looks like. And, you know, we talk a lot about living life, right? We talk about the difference between a Christian and a non-Christian is the difference between a dead person and a living person. Or at least that should be the difference. A lot of times you can't tell the difference, but it should be, right? Death to life. Like, that's an impossible thing. I talked to a medical professional earlier this week. I talked to her. I said, hey, when you bring somebody back, like if they flatline means your heart stops beating. It's the thing on the TV show where it goes, right? It's that thing, right? And so when your heart flatlines, when somebody's heart flatlines, how long do you typically spend, more or less, on them trying to start that heartbeat up? And she said, well, it could be anywhere from 30 minutes to an hour. 30 minutes to an hour. Like, that seems like a long time, but in the grand scheme of things, that seems like a really short time. It's like, could you spend a little bit more time trying to bring me back, right? But it's one of those things that I was asking her. So if they will come back to life, they usually do so that quickly. She goes, yeah. So she was talking about that impossibility. And then I asked her the question. I go, what is harder, to bring someone from death to life, basically starting their heartbeat up, or to bring someone that has gone brain dead, basically in a coma? A coma is like where you're just laying there, that you're asleep, you don't really do anything, you're not really conscious, you can't really talk or thing, but you're kind of there. Would it be easier to wake someone from that or to bring someone from death to life? And she goes, well, the thing is, it's kind of hard to go against both, but she goes, comas can last for years. And I was starting to do, she said that, I started studying it. There's one of the longest comas has been 37 years. And the lady actually ended up dying after that. The one of the longest ones that they've wakened from is 19 years. Which I don't, is any, I mean, there's some support staff here that are obviously over 19. But You can't even fathom that right now because that's before your life. Like, you're asleep. Just think about your life and just put a black slate over it and you don't know any of it, kind of thing. Like, that's how a coma, just to be gone that long and to wake up. Man, the changes. That's back, let's see, 19 years ago, 1996. So none of this or this. I don't even know if Nalgene bottles were invented by then. My beanie. What are you saying? Oh, the hipster look. Yep. So I'd be weird. So all this I already am. So this 19 years ago, that's crazy to think about. And so we started talking about this whole idea of what that means, and I started thinking about in the spiritual sense, you know, to bring someone from death to life. Basically, someone far from God to a relationship with God. Often that's an awesome experience, but it's seemingly an impossibility, bringing death to life. And that's really cool when God does that. And that's awesome to see someone being brought from dead to alive in Christ. But often I find myself, and I would beg to differ that you guys kind of find yourselves in the almost comatose state. And often we can get stuck there for years. Stuck in this state of looking alive, but really not being effective. Really not living life full like we were called to do. Really not doing anything, growing older on the outside, but spiritually we're not really growing at all, right? And so it's one of those things that, God, would you do the impossible and wake us out of that coma? Wake us out of that state of being brain dead spiritually, more or less, to where we can come fully alive in everything that God's created us to be, so that we can start doing something of eternal value, so that we can start seeing the impossible done through us. But first we have to have the impossible done to us. We have to wake up from that. See, often we need to stop playing defense in the sense of playing not to lose. We need to start playing the offense and start playing to win. We need to start attacking and start saying, God, we want to be bold this year of 2015. If we're going to see the impossible, if we're really going to serve the God of the impossible, that means we have to be bold in what we do and how we live. And it's no longer going to be okay for us to be mediocre and sit back and let life just come at us and just react to what's going to happen. God's calling us to raise the standard. When we start to see that, when we start to live life bold, when we start to live as if we're serving the God of the impossible, we start to see impossible things. We start to see addictions break. We start to see people that say, no, I'm never going to change. I even, over break, I actually heard somebody talking. They're like, you know, you keep telling me that I'm going to change, but guess what? It hasn't happened. You keep telling me this is going to happen and I'm going to change. But guess what? I haven't changed. Guess what? When we start to serve and live bold, we start to believe everything that God's called us to be, we start to see the impossible. We start to see the people that say, I'm never going to change. Change for Christ. We're going to start to see relationships mended. We're going to start to see a boldness start to happen. We're going to start to see some amazing, incredible things happen. And we're going to say, how on earth did that happen, God? How in the world did that happen? We're going to see that we're going to have the strength to make tough decisions, and we're going to be able to live lives restored. You know what's impossible? And I was thinking about this. Oops. Is we're going to be able to see light in the darkness. We're going to be able to see something impossible. If you think about light and everything that it is and just the impossibility, sometimes I go way far in my thinking. I'm like, that's really crazy. And Lauren's like, you think too much. But the impossibility of light, the impossibility of all that this is, that the fact that this can light up a room, that there's darkness, a void, and this brings light. There we go. It's just crazy to think about. If you start to think about it, I did a brief history of it, and this Yale professor studied the expense of light. How much is light cost throughout the years. And so he set up this primitive Babylonian candle thingy, and basically it ran on oil. And this Babylonian thing dated back to about 4,000 years ago. So we're talking Old Testament time, all right? So Abraham, Moses, all those guys. So we're talking old time. And he said, how much does it do? And he calculated it out. And for a day's wages, way back then, 4,000 years ago, you got enough oil to have light for 10 minutes. And that's it. It's like, oh, the sun went down. Okay, let's have dinner. Oh, eat it really fast. Oh, it's gone. Oh, no, I can't see my food. Right? And all of a sudden, we start to realize that, man, that is crazy. Over 4,000 years up to now, not much has changed. Right? They've done some advances. They've had whale blubber, you know, kill all the whales, and now activists are like, don't kill the whales, right? And they did this. This was crazy. They caught seabirds that were really oily. This was up in northern Europe, and they would kill it, and then they would shove a wick down its throat, and then they'd set it on a table, and that would be like the centerpiece, and they'd light the wick, and it would just burn and glow. So next time your mom does like a really pretty centerpiece, be like, well, could have had a dead bird burning. So I can't imagine the smell. But that was like their light, how they lit it. And, or you guys have done this, or I hope you have, caught fireflies, you know, the little lightning bugs. Woo. So in the tropics, they actually did that, and they would just like shove a ton of them. And that would literally be their like lanterns and stuff. They actually used that for light. And then that was the way it was until up to about 160 years ago, 1850. And this guy discovered how to pull this liquid called kerosene out of coal and out of oil and all this stuff. And all of a sudden now, a day's wages now bought you 5 hours of light because it was cheaper to do kerosene. And then the 1900s come. And these beautiful things, the light bulb was invented. And nowadays, a day's wages pays for about 20,000 hours worth of light. And it's crazy to see the advancements of an impossible thing and how ordinary it is now. You know, darkness used to be a huge deal. Paris, back in the day, back in the Dark Ages, Middle Ages, they would actually give their keys to a magistrate, like a police officer, and the guy would lock them into their house for safety during the night. Even into the 2000s, like just a couple years ago, Oakland, I know Toronto, I think, and a couple other cities did this light up the night campaign, saying that they were going to decrease the electricity charge, and encouraged people in neighborhoods to turn on more lights at their house to help decrease criminal activity, because people are so afraid of the dark. Darkness brings chaos, it brings confusion, it brings a lot of things. And yet, we're so accustomed to light. I mean, those bulbs cost, I don't know, $2, maybe $1.50 a piece. And it's like, man, how cheap light is now and how ordinary it is. An impossible thing that brought clarity now. How sweet would it be from a year from now, we look back and what we thought was impossible from right today, God, there's no way this is going to happen. I don't see this happening. There's no way you're going to call me into that field of ministry. There's no way that you're going to put this family back together. There's no way that I can break this addiction. There's just no way. And all of a sudden, we get next year at this time, we're going to say, oh, that's nothing. That's nothing. Yeah, I'll go pray. I'll go see a blind man healed. Oh, yeah, I can go talk to that person about Jesus. Oh, yeah, I can go invite my friend. That's nothing. That's nothing. That's just ordinary. How awesome would it be when we start to serve the God of the impossible, that the impossible becomes normal, that the impossible is the part of our ordinary, normal life? That's what I want to see us in. Now, we talk about this, and I'll take a sidetrack, and you'll catch up with me here in a second. First impressions are huge. They're crucial. They're big. The way you smell, the way you look, what you say is huge, right? So don't screw it up. Almost every first impression I have, I screw it up because I got a big, stupid mouth and I say a lot of stupid things, right? So first impressions are not my forte. But I want to look at God's first impression back in Genesis 1, and now you're like, oh, now I see where he's going. Back in Genesis 1, verse 1 through 4, what was it that God first said? The first recorded words of God. It's here. In the beginning, when God created the heavens and the earth was a formless void, and darkness covered the face of the deep, while a wind from God swept over the face of the waters. Then God said, "Let there be light." So wait a second. To God, the most important thing out of all of that was light. The impossible. Darkness was there. The impossible thing. He created light. His first words were to bring clarity to confusion, to bring purpose to chaos, to bring peace to despair, because that's what light does. And how awesome is that, that he created something out of nothing? He's the only thing that could do that. God is the only being that can create something out of nothing. And that's what's so cool. When God created light and brought purpose to our chaos, that, yeah, he did a physical act there, but how much more so does he do that in our personal lives of bringing order to chaos? Satan just wants to distort it. He just wants to steal it, and thus enters the serpent into the garden. And then all of a sudden, a different darkness, no longer a physical darkness was there, but a different darkness entered the world, and that was spiritual darkness. That was a spiritual coma. That was a flat line. That was a spiritual darkness that entered when mankind fell. But what I love about God is he's not done. Impossibilities are just normal for him. And so he did something incredible. He did another impossibility. He sent another type of light. In John 1, verse 1 through 5, it says, "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things came into being through him," talking about Jesus. "And without him, not one thing came into being. What has come into being in him was life, and that life was light to all people. The light shines in the darkness," I love this, "and the darkness did not overcome it." See, Jesus brought a different kind of light. He brought the spiritual light where he brings clarity into your confusion. He brings purpose into your chaos. He brings peace into your despair. So no matter what you face, no matter what you struggle with, God shines a light into that. The problem is we slip into this spiritual coma and we start to shut doors. We start to keep shadows. And God's light might be in one room in our hearts, but God's not shining brightly in every room. And so tonight, as we start to think about serving the God of the impossible, we got to first say, "God, would you shine in every area of my life? In my attitudes toward my parents, in my attitudes toward my siblings, and what I think about during school, and how I drive, and how I even study. God, would you infiltrate your light into every aspect of my darkness, into every aspect that I'm hiding?" Because here's the thing, we like to say we accept Christ, but do we really accept the clarity? Do we really accept the peace? Do we really accept the purpose that comes with it? It's like this, Christmas presents, I love them. And Obadiah loves them. And he's like, "Woohoo! Yeah! Presents!" Right? He's all about presents. But if I give him a present, it's not like he's like, "Yes! I love this bow! This is the best present ever." Right? But a lot of times, when God gave us the gift of his son, we're like, "Yes! We got Jesus!" What do you have to do with presents, though? You have to unwrap them? Right? There's something inside that we get to play with, we get to do something with, right? Obadiah loves to open the presents and then get to see this thing of, "Oh, yay, presents!" And it's like his Mulan and James, or it's his like fire rescue, dusty crop hopper, and all this fun stuff, right? He gets to play with it, he gets to use it, right? And that's what our lives are about, is we're called to use this clarity, use this purpose, use this vision that Christ gives us when he shines his light into us. But so many of us become comatose and say, "Oh!" We don't allow God's light to actually be used the way it was intended to. This was something cool that I was thinking about. I told you I like to think a lot. When was Jesus born? Time of day. time of day. They get to Bethlehem. It's late. It's nighttime, yeah? Because they're trying to find a place to stay, sleep, all that. Angels show up to the shepherds at night. Jesus was born physically into one of the darkest times of the day, nighttime. Just like often he wants to come into the darkest points in our life. Now check this. When was it discovered? And arguably, theologians say that when he was raised from the dead, when he finally claimed the final victory over death in the grave, what time of day? Morning time, right? He was crucified, it became dark, became die. But then Easter morning, it says Luke 24, verse 1, but on the first day of the week at early dawn. So he came, he's kind of like my mom, he woke the sun up. Hey, son, get up, right? And he came as light flooded the earth and gave us victory over sin and death. Gave us victory to conquer addictions, to conquer attitudes, to conquer frustrations, to conquer a brokenness. How cool is that? That he did a physical thing to show us a spiritual reasoning, to show us a spiritual meaning that our God wants to come into our darkest times. And he wants to bring light of day, to bring clarity. I just think that's incredible because Christ gave us the victory over every impossibility that we might face. Every struggle, everything. He invites us into a relationship with him. And so you might not be facing your darkest hour, but you might be in a spiritual coma. You might not be needing to be brought from flatline, from death to life, but you might be need to be awakened to the things of God, awakened to the real life that he has for you, awakened to be bold and to be used by God in a real way instead of just saying, well, let's just see what happens. To say, you know what, I'm going to advance God's word forcefully. In the year 2015, I'm not just going to sit back and wait for it to come to me. I'm going to advance God's gospel forcefully, knowing that he is the God of the impossible and he can do some impossible things in me and through me. And I'm not going to let fear dictate the call of God in my life. And I'm going to keep pushing. I'm going to keep striving. I'm going to keep going after it. Because what is impossible with man is possible with God. What is impossible with man is impossible with God. It's possible with God. So tonight, we're going to do something as we kick off this year. And it's one of these times where I always like to write myself and kind of get alone with God. And so we're going to take communion tonight. We're going to have a time where we get to kind of just get alone with God and write our view of who he is and surrender all of our plans and all of our dreams and all of that and say, God, would you have your way in my life? But before we do that, the worship team, why don't you guys go ahead and come on up. The worship team's going to come up. And what we're going to do is I'm going to ask you guys in a minute to stand and kind of just spread throughout the room. Find your own space. Find your own area. Just you and God. And man, I beg you to make the most of this opportunity to get alone with God. And what we're going to do is you're going to pray and you're going to seek God's face. And this is the prayer that I want you to simply pray is, God, fill me with light. God, search my heart. Wherever there's darkness, would you fill me with light? And then start asking God, in my life, what dark place are you wanting to shine?
Thanks again for listening to this message from Reality Student Ministries. Our hope is that you've learned a little bit more of who God is and who he has called you to be. For information on how you can get connected to our student ministry, be sure to check us out online at reality.painesvilleag.com or like our Facebook page at RSM. Now get out there and have an incredible day.